This is SaaS Scaled, the podcast where data meets action with host Armon Shrocky. Each week, Armon will be sitting down with CEOs and industry leaders from the technology sector, giving you the insight to innovate without reinventing the wheel. They'll discuss challenges, best practices, and how to identify the right metrics. So if you want to get to market faster and in a way that matters, then subscribe and join us every week as we discuss SaaS Scale. This episode is brought to you by Curvey, the modern no-code analytics solution, the tools you need to take action with your data on a platform built for maximum scalability, security, and cost efficiencies. If you're ready to reduce complexity and dramatically lower costs, then contact us today at curvey.com. That's Q-R-V-E-Y.com.
Hello, welcome to another episode of SaaS Scaled. I'm pleased to have Rich with us, and we are going to have a great discussion, a pretty unique discussion as well, on a topic that Rich has experienced for decades, and he's going to share with us, you know, maybe summarizing the whole decades of experience in a few minutes, who knows. Rich, can you tell us a little bit about yourself and what you do, the company as well?
Sure. Let's see. I've been a developer since age 9. I wrote my first game when I was 9 years old. Got published in a Compute Gazette when I was 12. And once I saw the internet get connected in 91, I was all about it. And I actually started my first digital marketing company, which was Email Marketing Newsletter, in 93. So I've been doing this for a long time. Well, unfortunately, the lion's share of my career for the last 20 plus years has been fighting fraud. People know about bots, you know, clicking on ads and things like that. And it's like, oh, okay, I know that that happens, but it doesn't happen to me. And there's some statistics that we'll talk about, I'm sure, on this podcast that'll give people a different thought process on the whole scenario. It's a huge problem. It's a big problem. But my position is co-founder and CEO of Anora. I was the first developer of the software when we started writing the software back in 2005. We started just writing the initial software. We didn't later spin it off into its own company until 2017. But been writing the code and working on it, and until I got a team, you know, up to speed and trained up on it, and then they took over and doing phenomenal things with it from my original starts. But that's kind of what we do.
Fantastic. So you already teasing the topic so a little bit. We would love to hear more about the stats you mentioned, because as you said, I'm one of those people that probably doesn't take this problem very seriously as well. And probably because we don't know exactly how common this problem is, that, you know, if this fraud issue about the digital advertisement is very widespread or it is very much kind of narrow, it is within particular areas or even geographically it matters. Can you expand a little bit upon that? I mean, definitely. Very interesting topic to know about.
Sure. Let's start with the bigger picture. In 2023 was the first time we tipped over $600 billion as a digital marketing spend across the entire globe. So globally tipped over $600 billion in marketing spend, digital marketing spend. We've estimated that last year, $125 billion, a little bit like almost 21%, was stolen due to fraud. So it's no longer a question of if you have fraud. It's a question of how much fraud do you have. And it really depends where you're buying your traffic, where you're getting your traffic, right? So if you're getting your traffic from programmatic, it's the highest level of fraud in the industry. It averages around 50% of your campaign is fraudulent. If you're advertising in search and social, you'll see somewhere between 5 and 10 or 15% fraud, depending on, you know, which network you buy from. If you're doing email marketing, we're seeing an average of 30% fraud. If you're doing affiliate marketing, we're seeing an average of 45% fraud. Geography is kind of hard to tell, and I'll tell you why. We live in a society where privacy is so important, right? So all these rules and regulations and technology have come out to hide the true origin of a visitor. So when fraud takes place, it's usually perpetrated overseas, but they bounce off of US IP addresses, so it makes it look like it's US visitors that are committing fraud. But one thing we did notice is that I want to say, and I'm just trying to go off the top of my head here, I want to say 40% of the digital marketing spend of that $600 billion is spent based on US campaigns. So fraudsters go where the money is, and they're going to target US-based campaigns, even though the fraud is perpetrated overseas. So understanding geography, where exactly it's happening, it's hard to put a pinpoint on it and exactly where it's going, just because any person can jump on the dark web and hide themselves very easily. So it makes it very difficult to do that. One of the things always people ask is, you know, why and where is fraud perpetrated from? Well, the why is money, right? $125 billion industry with generally no laws against it. It's a very hot spot for fraudsters to go after because they can commit the fraud and not be arrested for doing it. Because there's no laws against it right now. No big laws internationally. We all know it's theft. You're stealing money from an advertiser, but it's not spelled out like that in a law. So when you're looking at fraud, where is fraud perpetrated mostly? It's organized crime. So if you kind of connect the dots, if you're paying money online right now to advertise online, in some fashion, you're actually supporting organized crime.
And I believe that companies like, for example, Google may not be even, you know, I don't know if in a way this is working against the person who pays for advertisement, but not really working against Google or other companies that provide the platform for advertisement. So in a way, it's not like they have motivation, a lot of motivation to go after these kind of frauds. Or maybe I'm mistaken. Maybe they are actually taking it very seriously and they are very much trying their best to really find this. I don't know. I mean, you would know.
Yeah, so I'll get into that a little bit. Different channels, because you got a lot of different, you got eight basic marketing channels, right? And then inside of each of those channels, so like you say search, and then you have a bunch of search companies like Google, Yahoo, Bing are the big three search companies. You say native, you've got Taboola, Outbrain, and then you've got a bunch of native platforms underneath that. So each channel has different challenges. In my opinion, search and social channels tend to want to do the best they can to eliminate fraud. Like, for example, Facebook is a perfect example. They don't buy traffic from anywhere, right? 100% of their traffic is generated in-house. Mm-hmm. But how many of us know that Facebook has fake profiles, right? Everybody knows they have fake profiles. Facebook knows they have fake profiles. And those fake profiles take the actions that commit ad fraud in order to keep those profiles alive, because Facebook is actively trying to shut down those profiles. But if those profiles are interacting with ads, interacting with content, and doing things that a real person would do, it makes it very difficult for Facebook to shut that traffic down. Google, on the other hand, let's look at Google, whether it's Google, Yahoo, or Bing, it doesn't matter. They're all the same. They're all in the same boat. They don't get 100% of their traffic from their own site. So like 100% of the traffic that you buy from Google doesn't come from Google.com. It comes from like CNN or weather.com or all these other sites, and then tons of other sites that you're not familiar with. You know, and basically all these publishers are getting paid by the click. So when you have an incentive to get paid by the click, there's an incentive for people to do things that are wrong. Now, I want to believe, you know, because I believe in the good in everybody, that Google and Facebook are doing their job to try to eliminate it. That's why they have some of the lower levels of fraud in the industry. So Google and Facebook, about 5 to 10% of the traffic that we monitor are fraudulent. So it's not a small amount, but it's in the ecosystem of digital marketing, it's probably one of the smaller amounts, a smaller percentages of fraud, where, like I said, we talk about programmatic, you know, which is the biggest marketing channel out there. There's 50% average of fraud. Mm-hmm. And we could talk about that if you want. Like, there's a reason why those DSPs don't have such a high level of fraud. We'll get into that a little bit. So I don't know if your audience is familiar with the RTB arrangement inside of a programmatic exchange, but you've got the DSPs where the clients log in and build their campaigns. And then you have the SSPs that go out and buy traffic from different publisher websites. And then, of course, in the middle, you have the RTB, the real-time bidding environment, to say, hey, I've got a visitor who's in Delaware. It's raining out. Do you have an ad for this? And all of a sudden, oh, yeah, I've got an umbrella company willing to sell ads to people in Delaware. You know, and they match up each other and they do this in that magic 100 millisecond response time. And inside of that 100 millisecond response time, most DSPs today will tell you they use a fraud prevention tool. And so they'll tell you, yes, we use, and they'll name the company that they use. That's a reputable company. The problem that they don't tell you is that it's what's known as a GIVT filter, a general invalid traffic filter. It's looking at the IP address, maybe the user agent, maybe another data point or two, but it's got to respond back in like 15 or 20 milliseconds in order to make that 100 millisecond response time request. If you're only looking at IP address and user agent, you're only going to catch a small amount of fraud. And typically these tools in the RTB environment of a programmatic exchange will catch 1% to 3% fraud. So they'll tell you, we're doing our job, we're catching the fraud. What they're not knowing or not telling you is that when the fraud, when the traffic flows through the environment and lands on a landing page, there's what's known as SIVT, sophisticated invalid traffic. So you're talking about advanced bots, AI bots, malware, human fraud. All that stuff can get past a pre-bid tool. So what you need is a tool at the end that's collecting hundreds of data points in order to identify that sophisticated attack. And because they can't inject that in that in real time and make it work, it's not done. And most people think, hey, they've got a fraud solution in place, I'm protected. Meanwhile, 50% of their budget is being shown to bots and malware and human fraud farms.
So two questions. Number one, what is the motivation on the other side by just clicking on an ad or, you know, creating a software that does that? Number one, I need to understand what is the motivation on that. Yeah. So what is the incentive? Number two, how come, or I would say, you know, from a SaaS company perspective, if you are really putting a lot of money into advertisement or digital kind of marketing, how can we kind of protect our spending and spend less and prevent those kind of, you know, cases that those are actually fraud, those are clicks that we are not going to get any value out of it. So so if you could expand on that.
So the first question is, you know, what's the motivation? Money, right? We just talked about $125 billion being lost to fraud. Somewhere along the line, every marketing channel is a little different. But if you look at programmatic is generally sold on a cost per view basis, right? CPM basis. You know, how much are you going to spend for 1,000 people seeing your ad? However, if you have an ad that runs and doesn't generate any clicks, it's going to automatically get shut off either programmatically or through some type of digital marketing manager. So the fraudster knows, okay, in order for me to get paid on 1,000 visitors, I need to send one or two clicks there to make it look like it's legitimate traffic. So they send fake clicks. Now they don't get paid on the click, they get paid on the impression, but the two go hand in hand together, right? So they have to make it look real so that it stays online. But bottom line is every channel that you look at, whether it's Google, Facebook, native, email, display, whatever, the motivation for fraudster is money. I read a report by, I can't remember who, but it was another agency reporting on fraud. And they said that the average individual fraudster makes $5 million a year in revenue. So that's the motivation, right? Money. The second question, could you remind me again what you were looking on that second question? You mentioned...
Sure. So I wonder, you know, if there is such a... It's more like taxing our digital marketing budget as a SaaS company. Every SaaS company with any SaaS product, you know, has to do some kind of digital marketing for most part. And if I feel like, you know, we are getting taxed because based on what you said, a percentage of that money will not be real traffic or real. So how can we minimize it or protect our investment on digital marketing against these fraud cases?
Sure. Bottom line, it's going to be data. You've got to look at the data. In this day and age with AI, machine learning, and all this other stuff, you know, if you're a digital marketer, your best bet is to license a fraud solution that knows what they're doing, right? Like, that's what we do. So the goal for us is to help our clients identify that audience that's coming in that's fake, that has no conversion value, and minimize or eliminate the money that you spend there, and then take that money, reinvest it into a real audience that has likely to convert so that your ROAS goes up. You want to have a high return on ad spend, and any fraudulent traffic that gets in the way is going to reduce that. So the goal is to identify where that's coming from, find a way to mitigate it so that your budget, you're still spending the same budget, but you're moving the budget around to the audience that's going to perform for you and generate you higher sales. So if you're a SaaS-based company, if you're an e-commerce-based company, understanding where the fraud's coming from and then having a game plan to mitigate that is going to be key in optimizing your ROAS.
Now, the nature of, for example, if you focus on maybe one of these channels, maybe focusing on one of the most famous, most useful channels that for advertisement that people use digital marketing, like Google AdWords. Mm-hmm. Can you be more specific about, for example, if I'm putting some AdWords there in order to bring some traffic to my website, how can it be kind of, you know, why people, what is the incentive for people and how they can trick it, how they can really kind of make money out of the ad that I'm putting there for Google AdWords to bring some traffic to my website?
So 90% of the traffic that Google sells doesn't come from google.com, right? So it comes from other websites or other publisher websites. It could be CNN, it could be weather.com, but there are tens of thousands of websites that you're not familiar with where traffic comes from. It could be these little sites that have some content, maybe like, let's say you're talking about, you know, car parts, right? So there may be a blog out there that talks about car parts and specific stuff, and then has the Google ads embedded inside that article. And then if somebody clicks on those ads, that's a paid click that a publisher gets paid on to send traffic to Google, which is ultimately your campaign. So there's where the incentive is, because if these publisher sites start driving traffic from cheaper traffic sources or traffic sources that have more fraudulent traffic embedded in it, it's going to raise the amount of fraud that's affected in that ad campaign. Now, Google does an okay job identifying some of that to try to protect their clients, but in our opinion, hasn't been 100% effective. We're still finding an average of 5 to 10% fraud in Google search. Excuse me. Now, if you also look at Google Display Network, which a lot of people are using, Google Display Network has an average of 50% fraud because it's Display Network again. So if you're spending money in these areas, you know, you need to have some tools in place to identify where it's coming from, because again, the average person's spending, I think I just did this lookup in preparation for this meeting. 60% of the Google accounts for Google search only spend more than $50,000 a month in digital marketing. So if you're spending, let's just call it $50,000 a month in digital marketing on Google ads, and we're finding 10 or 15% of that is fraudulent, you're $5,000 to $7,000 a month in fraud. You can easily afford to spend money on a solution to identify where it's coming from and then have a game plan to reduce or eliminate that.
And some of this information that you share with these companies, that how can it be circled back to the vendors so they can use it as well to essentially find the root cause or the root problems and eliminate those, or maybe you already do. For example, if during your analysis you realize that these sources are not valid sources, is there any mechanism for you to provide that feedback to the advertiser, you know, company, and just help them also to be more efficient and effective?
So we have a product called Search and Social Protect. It's designed to give real-time feedback to the networks that you buy traffic from. So it could be Google, Facebook, TikTok, Instagram, I mean, whatever network you're buying from. we have a real-time loop that feeds that information back to Google to say, hey, stop sending me this audience and start sending me more of this audience. So what happens is we'll find that our typical client using our Search and Social Protect product will see a 50% reduction in fraud in the first 3 months. So automatically, it makes life easy. It's one of those things that once it's set up and installed, there's not a lot of management behind it that's required. The system will automatically do the real-time feedback back to that network to reduce the amount of fraud that you're already seeing, you're being exposed to, and essentially hide your ads from fraudsters so they can't even see your ad in the first place. So if they can't see your ad, they can't click on your ad. So go back to that site we talked about, that little blog site about car parts. You know, right now your ad might be part of that, but if they have a high level of fraud, next time that somebody goes to that site, your ad's not even going to show. So if your ad doesn't show, it's automated for you, so you don't have to do a lot of heavy lifting. All that work is done through the software.
And I think in this case, AI can help on both sides, right? So it can help better algorithms on the fraud cases that they get smarter about that using AI. And also it can get, you know, help the other, you know, fraud detection part smarter to really detect them better. From your perspective, who's taking, you know, advantage of AI in a better, smarter way at the moment?
Well, we constantly test AI, but AI is kind of like a child, right? You teach it certain things, and then it goes off and does its own thing. We prefer machine learning. That's what we've been working best for us for the last 20 years, where you can instruct it to do exactly certain tasks, and it will crunch through massive amounts of data and produce a result for you. We keep an eye on AI, keep testing models, because we know ultimately they're, you know, fraudsters are using AI to get around it. In fact, you know, we're all familiar with ChatGPT, right? Very popular tool. Lots of people use it. Fastest growing company and blah, blah, blah. You know, it's huge, right? But have you heard of FraudGPT? Download FraudGPT on the dark web, and it will actually create bots for you using AI to build bots to go out and do whatever task you want to commit fraud. So the fraudsters have access to these tools. So do we. And we use the tools and what direction we see that best fits our needs to protect our clients. So, yeah, it's important to understand that these tools are out there. They're getting smarter, so which means the fraud is going to get smarter and harder to detect. So it gets to a point where you're going to need a service like ours to be able to identify what's going on and stop it. There are only a few companies around the world that do what we do and do it right. So it's a lot more cost effective to hire a company like us than it is to try to build a team of people in-house, build a data lake, build a processing plant, build a machine learning models or AI models, if you're going to use AI to build and process all that data. And then again, you're still only looking at your own data. You know, a company like ours looks at hundreds of clients' data aggregated together and gives us more patterns, more recognition, more data signals that we can go on to help find and mitigate more fraud.
And most of your customers are enterprise, government, or SaaS?
Most of our clients are mid-level companies and above that focus on digital marketing for performance basis. Our system is so accurate that when you performance matters, looking at the performance of your campaigns really makes a difference. That's where our solution excels because of the accuracy and thoroughness of the solution. We can play in the performance marketing space very well. But anybody spending money on digital marketing is an ideal client for us because we can help them identify, hey, how much fraud are they dealing with? You know, and does it make financial sense to work with a company like us, or is it worth just paying for the fraud? Because, you know, if you're spending $1,000 a month and 10% of that's fraud, which means, you know, $100 a month is fraud, it's going to be cheaper just to deal with it than to try to mitigate it. It's not worth the problem. But if you're spending $100,000 a month and we're finding 10% fraud, now you got a $10,000 a month problem. Yeah, it's cheaper to solve the problem than it is to pay for it.
Mm-hmm. And normally in telecom world, in old days, for example, there were some cases that, and many companies that their business model was, for example, in traditional phone system, if there are some mistakes being made and some extra charges, you know, happening on the billing system, they could detect those. And those were not fraud per se, mostly mistakes were made. And then they could detect those and then, you know, get compensated for percentage of those savings. So the business model was very kind of well designed in a way that it was easy decision to work with them, because essentially they take one or some percentages of the saving that you have anyway. And that was really the rationale behind their fast growth, because of that reason, because of that pricing model. Now, I wonder in your case, it is the same, that you actually take some percentage of the fraud money that you can return and you can protect, or it is more about really a certain particular pricing structure, a fee structure that will apply regardless, and how does it work for companies?
Sure. Good question. So most companies nowadays, like Google, Facebook, they've got a way to ask for a credit, but they're very tight. They don't give out credits easily. So if I tied my business model to something like that and trying to get them credits, it would be a problem, right? So what we've done is built our model about helping people to avoid the fraud in the first place, so they don't get charged for it in the first place, and they don't have to worry about trying to get a credit. So a lot of times the way our pricing model is built is a price per visitor scan. So typically it's a fraction of a penny per visitor scan. So if someone's paying $2-3 a click and we're asking for a fraction of a penny to scan that visitor, it's very reasonable for our service, for what we do. And it gives them a clear-cut budget, and they can set up, you know, inside of their system, they can have a budget, they know what they're spending, they know what they're getting, you know, what they're in for. But again, the whole goal is, if we're doing our job right and we identify $10,000, $100,000 a month in fraud, and we can save them, you know, we can cut that in half in the first 90 days, you know, there's a clear-cut ROI for the product that they're licensing with us. You know, and there's also a lot more behind that. Let's say you're an e-commerce company and you're spending money on, we'll stick with Google, right? You're spending money on Google, driving traffic to your landing page, and fraud comes along, buys a product using a stolen credit card. So now not only did you pay for the marketing, but now you got to ship out a product that eventually is going to get a chargeback. That's going to cost you hard dollars on the product you shipped out, the shipping costs, you know, processing stuff. And then, of course, you get hit with a chargeback. So now you got a chargeback fee and everything else. And again, if the number of chargebacks you have gets to a certain point, you can be in risk of losing your merchant account. So there's a lot of ancillary issues that will pop up if fraud gets through into your ecosystem. So we work with some clients that are working with high risk merchants, because a lot of times that stuff is just fraudulent activity that they're buying. They're buying traffic to their landing page. It's fraudulent. People are using stolen credit cards to get paid on the affiliate link, to get, you know, to be porch pirates, like whatever. They're somewhere they're getting paid. And when the chargeback comes back, it hurts the merchant. You know, because they're in danger of losing their ability to charge the credit cards. And if you can't charge credit cards as an e-commerce company, you're pretty much out of business. So it's important to protect all of that property that you've built, all of that intellectual property that you built, and protect your engine. So if you're spending money on digital marketing, sure enough, you have fraud coming through, and you need to do something to protect it. And that's what we do.
I understand. Is it the kind of service that people may say we will need it mostly during the first 3 months or 6 months, and then the model will change, or we will fine-tune, you know, our system, so maybe, you know, we need to change gears at that point and use it in a different kind of capacity? Or you would say, no, it is really something you need to turn on and keep it on all the time?
Good question again. Call it like a visitor firewall, right? That's pretty much what we built, is the ability to identify a visitor as real or fake, and then decide, do we let them process credit cards or not? That's always evolving, right? Fraud is always evolving. In fact, we're rolling out one or two new updates every single week on new fraud threats that we're catching. And it's just like a firewall. Like, you know, people have firewalls in front of their web servers to protect their web servers from all kinds of stuff. You know, once you shut that web server, once you turn that on, you say, wow, we got all this activity and it's reducing. Okay, we're in good spot. Let's shut it off. Now you're unprotected again. So it's unfortunately, but it's something that you're going to need ongoing. It's not something that you turn on, clean up your traffic, and then turn it off. We've had clients do that and they come back to us. Probably the fastest one was within a week. They said, no, we're good. We got our fraud levels down to a certain level. Everybody's happy. They shut it off. And a week later, they realized they had fraudulent activity going on and it was costing them a lot more money than what they were spending with us. And they realized the need to keep the software up and running and protecting them in real time 24/7.
Yeah, definitely a very unique discussion about a topic that most of us, including myself, may not know that much. So thanks very much for joining us and explaining this topic. At the end, I would like to ask you if you have any book or some books that you wanted to recommend, something that either personally or professionally you liked.
Two books, one book, probably my all-time favorite book is Dale Carnegie, How to Win Friends and Influence People. Probably the biggest takeaway from that is when you're having conversations with people, the more you talk, the less they like you. the more they talk, the more they like you. So it's just probably just a good overall book, whether you're in, like, it's designed for sales, right? But it's a good overall book just for general conversation, general mixing and mingling with people. It's one of my go-to books that I'll read once every couple of years, just because it's such a good book and timely book. So that's probably my go-to book.
Fantastic. Thank you very much, Rich, for joining us again. It was a great discussion.
Thank you, Armin. I appreciate you appreciate the time.
Thank you for listening to SaaS Scaled with Armin Ashraghi. For show notes and any resources mentioned in today's episode, go to sasscaled.com. If you're enjoying our show, give us a 5-star review and share on LinkedIn. And be sure to subscribe for any updates on future episodes. Thanks for listening. This episode is brought to you by Curvey, the modern no-code analytics solution, the tools you need to take action with your data on a platform built for maximum scalability, security, and cost efficiencies. If you're ready to reduce complexity and dramatically lower costs, then contact us today at curvey.com. That's Q-R-V-E-Y.com.